This week on the show, 98.5 The Sports Hub's Joe Murray puts his cards on the table when it comes to legalized sports betting. Jake Asman from Sports on the Go 1 in New York joins us to catch up on the Red Sox and Yankees. And the Celtics embarrassed LeBron James. Can they do it again? All that and more coming up. Calling It starts right now. It's finally happened, Lebowitz. This is the Calling It podcast. Alex Barth, Alex Lebowitz with you, as we are each and every Monday. We record. You can listen to it whenever you want. We might be with some people every Tuesday, with some people every Wednesday. By Thursday, I won't lie, the stuff gets a little dated. So hopefully you're listening earlier in the week. But it's finally happened, a week after our Kentucky Derby show. You can bet on sports now. Who would have thought?
Yeah,
that sports gambling would ever come to America. My God.
Yeah, now we can finally gamble because no one was ever doing it before.
Right, this is a new frontier, a new field. Imagine, you had to go to Vegas, you had to go all the way to Las Vegas before. Now you can do it in the comfort of your own home.
Well, we can go to Foxwoods too, but that wasn't.
Do they have a sports book?
They do not have a sports book, but you can gamble. So gambling was legal,
but not on sports.
But not on sports. It's
no.
A new thing.
And I've never been to Vegas, so I've never gambled on sports.
Yeah. Well, now you can.
Joining us on the phone from 98.5 The Sports Hub, a man who's been known to place a wager or two, Joe Murray. Joe, how you doing this morning?
It's a great day for sports bettors, guys. I will tell you, a small victory, but a great day for those sports bettors out there.
Well, let's start with this, Joe. Obviously, the headline's great that the Supreme Court has allowed state-sanctioned sports gambling. But it doesn't just mean you can go out tomorrow and put $100 down on the Celtics game. There's more to it than that. What is the nitty-gritty that maybe should give some people some pause here?
So nitty-gritty is that New Jersey will be able to move fast in order to get sports wagering happening in their state. There are probably some other states like Delaware, Mississippi, some other states out there that might be able to do it. But not all the, you know, the big major sports teams or sports leagues, I guess, are really involved yet. So, for instance, football, one of the biggest betting sports in the country. Well, they were presented something at the owners' meetings this year, but it might take 5-10 years for this to develop for them. NBA as well. You know, this is something that they've been dealing with for a long time now as far as issues when it comes to gambling. I think the biggest thing for at least the four major sports is they don't want to interrupt the integrity of the game. And again, we've seen that in the NBA. We know that NHL players have bet on sports in the past. But the long and short of it, it's a victory for small states, especially New Jersey. But in Massachusetts, who knows how long it will take to get there.
You say that these leagues don't want to ruin the integrity of the game. But we've seen in the past 10 years the NFL becoming more forgiving to offense and trying to, you know, make the games more high scoring. Do you expect that trend to increase with the news coming out today, not just in the NFL, but in other leagues?
Well, I think that's more about the fans in fantasy football, right? I mean, we've heard about FanDuel and DraftKings and stuff like that. Like, that's probably not going anywhere at this point. So as far as, you know, the league changing and being offensive, that probably caters more to that in mobile site and things like that. But you know, now this is about real sports wagering. The only place you can do it right now, as we all know, is Vegas, which is, I don't know, $4.8 billion they make a year in this. So, you know, the fact that it's now, you know, it can be in other states in the country, it's a big thing. But let's just say this for, you know, quickly here regarding the NFL. They should be all over this thing. Like, think about it. You could go to Gillette Stadium, Cowboy Stadium, and actually place bets if everything goes through here. You can actually place bets while you're at the game and enjoy the game. This is going to be bigger money for the leagues, bigger money for the owners, because you know they're going to get their stake in it. And in the end, it's probably more money for the players. So it's probably going to take some years to develop, but I think integrity of the game has to be the first and foremost thing on the table.
So, it will, like you said, help the sport itself. How does this affect sports gaming, right? I'd imagine now with more people putting money in and maybe some less experienced people, lines are going to change, over-unders are going to change. How does this affect the gambling itself?
Well, I think different places will have different lines first and foremost. You know, there might be a different line at Caesars where, you know, Bellagio may be a different line. It's really where the money's coming in from, I think, will be the biggest thing on that. But, you know, really the biggest thing about today is the fact that is probably going to come to New Jersey. We know that it could be a wise guy city, and there could be intel on that. And that's why I just keep saying integrity of the game is the biggest issue. And, you know, we know about officials that have been, you know, swayed in the past. We know players in other sports have been swayed in the past as well. Even managers like Pete Rose in the past have been involved. So I think that's where it all starts. But this is going to be a cash cow, an absolute cash cow, if the four major sports are involved in this. I'm sure there'll be taxes involved at some point. But for the most part today, guys, I just think that it's a big win for a state like, you know, like New Jersey. And hey, locally here on the East Coast, we don't have to go to Vegas anymore. We might be able to just go to the Atlantic City.
Joe, we're gonna have to like charge New Jersey their travel board ad space on the show the way you're talking about it. In terms of fixing games and all of that, people who are understating that as a concern and saying, "Oh, it's 2018; it's not an issue anymore." They have to be kidding themselves, right? And then also incidents like this in the past. What does this do for a guy like Pete? Pete Rose has to be in the Hall of Fame now, right? They can't keep him out now that it's legal.
No, I still think it's something that, you know, the commissioner at the time said, "Hey, don't bet on sports." He did it. He broke a golden rule. Maybe over time it will happen. But just to get back to it, though, like, tonight's a big game in the NBA, okay? It's Houston and Golden State. Look who the referees are, the officials tonight. Scott Foster and Tony Brothers, guys who were involved in the Tim Donaghy case just years ago. If you look at the total, if you look at their records against teams that are at home, they normally favor the road team in those games. So I'm interested tonight to see Golden State on the road if they win that game strictly because of the officials. And again, I think a sport like the NBA likes to force things to go extra games for those TV ratings. Maybe that's something that happens with the NFL and the NHL, and that's where I guess the whole integrity of the game comes down to. But yeah, I mean, listen, we've heard about it in the playoffs where, you know, with the Bruins, you know, there was an official from South Boston who goes against the Bruins on some calls, and we saw some pretty questionable calls. It's going to be, the integrity of the game is definitely going to be a question, but everybody's going to be betting.
Right now, and we're talking to Joe Murray of 98.5, the Sports Hub. Right now, the MLB median age is like 137 or something like that. I just wanted to ask you, what might this do to viewership in the MLB? I know you said it might take years for this to really take effect, but is this going to be a big-time positive for baseball?
It would have to be, right? I mean, I'll tell you, it's a dangerous sport to bet on. It really is. Like, whether it's injuries, you base it off of what the lineup is, what the weather is like. I mean, even in David Price's situation, you put him in a dome and he pitches well, and then, you know, you put him in Texas and who knows how well he'll pitch. You know what I mean? This could help the ratings. That's a great question. MLB needs it. They need a star. But maybe the thing that really comes in and help is actually wagering on the games to watch the games into the ninth inning and things like that. This could be something that helps the ratings. And I wouldn't be surprised if maybe there are Major League Baseball supporters behind this move to try to get more attention to the game. So that's an excellent question, and I wouldn't be surprised if Major League Baseball certainly gets involved in this.
How far can this ruling go in terms of, we know it's going to affect the four major sports leagues. I saw today somebody created a website to bet on professional and college lacrosse. I know soccer is a big gambling sport. How deep can this go? Am I going to be able to go to a fifth-grade rec basketball game and put money on it?
No. But I do know this. I do know that they – and this might be a local thing. I don't know, guys. Like, I've seen high school sports, big games that are, like, on television. I know that golf is one of the big ones trying to get involved. We know soccer is one of the biggest betting sports in the country. I would say golf, maybe MMA. I mean, MMA, certainly, boxing, things like that. But I don't think it will reach outside of the big sports. I'm sure WNBA will be involved, but I don't think we'll be getting into, going down to the kids' rec league game or anything like that. High school sports that are on television, though, like football and basketball, I think maybe, and who knows. That's, again, the integrity of the game. I'm going to keep saying it over and over. If there are any issues whatsoever, I think people will stay away. But obviously, if money's involved, people will always keep coming back to the window and betting and watching those games.
A decade from now, how will sports media differ from what we see today, given the implementation of this new gambling rule?
I just think that they'll say, all right, tonight we have the Golden State Warriors and the Houston Rockets. Houston at home is a 1-point favorite tonight. I think that's how they'll start everything. We see it in boxing, right? Boxing already, they go right to the odds, how many rounds it is. I mean, that's just a sport that obviously is in Vegas, but I think that's how it will be presented, the heavy favorite, the heavy underdog, instead of the underdog Celtics versus the heavy favorite Cavaliers. I think that's the way it will go, but I think the lines will always be transparent. Everyone will know who the favorite is, who the underdog is, and at the end of the game, I'm sure the announcers will also be involved in, you know, just like you heard Al Michaels, a lot of people may have been watching just for that late touchdown. I think TV viewing will increase for that reason, and I think everything will be transparent as far as what, you know, what the odds are for each game.
So overall, would you call this a positive? For the leagues themselves, for the industry of sport itself.
I don't know, guys. I really don't. I mean, I think it's good because, you know, it's going to bring people together to watch games, and that's what we all want to do, right? We all want to be entertained, and it's going to be great for it's actually great for all of us, right? It's great for all of us. You guys might never bet on a game in your life, but this is great because there's going to be more media, more attention to it, and I think that's what sports needs in general. But I don't know. I mean, I will always question the integrity of a game. You know, I mean, a couple of weeks ago, I had a moment where a three-pointer went in at the buzzer, and I overreacted because I didn't think it would happen. And, you know, I think I'll always question those things, but I'll still put money on it. I'll still keep coming back to the window. So to answer your question, it probably is a good thing because you'll get the average fans, the not-so-average fans, anyone who's involved that just wants that can have access to go to the window instead of going to the shady guy down the street, they'll have access to do it, and I think it will bring attention to the sport.
You can get plenty of betting talk with Joe Murray on 98.5 The Sports Hub. You can follow him on Twitter as well, at Joey Murr. Joe, thanks for coming on and chatting some book with us.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate the time today.
Calling It is brought to you by American Broadcast Coaches, training the next generation of media talent and communicators. For more information, check out AmericanBroadcastCoaches.com.
Welcome back to the show. This is Calling It, powered by CLNS with Alex Barth and Alex Lebowitz. And, Lebo, these Red Sox-Yankees games this year have been great. We can now put money on how these series might end, so definitely need to break it down. Joining us from the Asman and Budick Show from Sports on the Go 1 in New York is Jake Asman. He is an avid watcher of the New York Yankees, I can gather from Twitter. Jake, how you doing?
I'm doing good, guys. Thanks for having me on the program. And yes, we can legally bet on baseball pretty much moving forward, and I'm sure they'll get that situated within a few weeks, maybe a few months, I'm hearing. But how crazy is that this morning, the legalized gambling news? And the story broke right as our show this morning got off the air, so we didn't get a chance to touch on it. But that's probably going to lead our show tomorrow. That's a huge deal.
And we'll talk more about it later in our show. I can't wait to experience what betting on sports is like. I can only imagine how much fun that is now that it's legal. We can all finally try it out. Let's talk some Sox and Yankees here, Jake. The rivalry's back. There's no question. This is as good as it's gotten. We're sitting here on May 14th. Both teams, I mean, we got a tie for first place in the AL East. Each team, I believe, is 28-12,
yep,
if memory serves correct. Which team should be more surprised that there's a tie for first place right now, Jake? The Red Sox or the Yankees?
You know, that's a tough question. I think the Yankees should be surprised only because they got off to a 9-9 start and Boston was 17-2. So the fact that they made up, I think, a 7.5 game lead in a little more than 2 weeks to me is surprising. Not that I didn't think the Yankees would get back into the division race because I picked them before the season started to win the AL East. I just think the fact that they were already 7.5 games behind because of the unbelievable start the Red Sox got off to, and it took them a little bit to get going. But the thing in New York, people were freaking out about the Yankees, and you know, we talked about it on our show a lot. They were 9-9. It's not like this Yankees team was ever under 500, but it was magnified due to the expectations for this team following last year and due to the fact Boston got off to such a great start. So I think the bigger surprise at this point would be the Yankees being tied with Boston just because of the start the Red Sox initially got off to.
What's been your impression of Giancarlo Stanton's transition? Obviously, he was off to a pretty rocky start, but the last 15 games or so, he's picked it up big time. Do you think he's back in the swing of things?
he looks really good right now. Over his last 20 games, he's hitting around 290. His batting average is nearly, I think it's in the 250s again. I think he's hitting 252, if I'm correct. Yes, he's hitting 252 right now. He's looked really good. He was 4-for-4 in yesterday's win. Against left-handed hitters this year, he's hitting nearly 500. So the key for him is just to hopefully he'll get some luck and face lefties. He's been really good the last few games here for this team. And the thing with Stanton is he's notoriously known for being a slow starter, which doesn't help when you come to the biggest media market in the world and you're expected to be, you know, the Giancarlo Stanton of 2017, in which he, of course, won the MVP. But how about this stat? Through 40 games played this year, Stanton's hitting 252 with 10 home runs and 26 RBIs. Through 40 games played last year, he's hitting 260, or he hit 263 with 11 home runs and 27 RBIs. So he basically has identical stats to what he did last year at this point through 40 games, except the average is 10 points lower, and he's been great in his last 20 games or so. So overall, I think he got off to that slow start. The booing was ridiculous by some Yankee fans. I'll never understand.
I was going to say, you left strikeouts out of those numbers there, Jake. I don't know if that was a purposeful omission, but...
Well, just looking at the offensive numbers, strikeout-wise, I have those too. I think he struck out 15 more times this year than he has last year, which contributes to his average being 9 points lower than it was last year. But if you look at where we are right now, with Stan, he's going to be fine. And anyone that knows baseball, anyone that watches baseball, understands that it's 162 games. He's going to have that 1 month where he carries the team. And that's honestly what's been so impressive about this run the Yankees have been on. Outside of a handful of games from Stan during the stretch, he's been pretty quiet. He's had his moments, but the Yankees have been able to win games, really, without him going out there and producing, which just shows you how deep their lineup is. But overall, I don't think anyone is concerned about Stanton, and I wouldn't be surprised if he really keeps up this next month and really gets himself going.
Part of this run for the Yankees included a 2-1 series win over the Red Sox in the middle of last week. I like how the schedule works out this year because they met in April, they met in May, they'll meet in June. It's all spread out, and I feel like each series is going to add another chapter, is going to add another detail, another peek behind the curtain of these two teams. Jake, what did you learn from their series in the middle of the week last week that you didn't know or you hadn't figured out yet before they met?
Well, considering the fact that they've played now six games and each team has won three of them, I think that's kind of going to be what it is all year. And you made the point at the beginning of this, Alex, that the rivalry's back. And you're absolutely right. It's just the electricity at Yankee Stadium last week for – you know, a series in the first week of May was unbelievable. It was great, and that's what baseball needs. I think this rivalry is great for the game, and it's great for both teams. I think the biggest thing I learned is that this division is probably not going to come down to the games the Yankees and the Red Sox play against each other, because if you really play it out and they roughly go, you know, 500 against each other, the division's going to be decided on how they do against other teams, because I think the Yankees and the Red Sox are going to beat each other up all year. I can't see one team really pulling away in the season series. I think it's going to be, you know, pretty even like it is right now, around 500 all season.
You mentioned the rivalry being back. Joe Kelly's become somewhat of a hero here in Boston. He's never going to have to buy another beer in this city. Is Tyler Austin being seen the same way in New York? What was kind of the fallout for him after the, we'll say the fallout?
I think people respected Tyler Austin for just getting, getting the team going a little bit. The Yankees have been scuffing along, and it brought some energy. It brought some juice back to the rivalry. But for the most part, I really thought that whole situation, to be honest, was a bit overblown. I didn't think it really required, you know, a bench-clearing brawl. Was the slide by Austin maybe slightly late and could be interpreted the wrong way? Sure, but I didn't think it should have constituted, you know, a full-on bench-clearing brawl. But it's good for the rivalry, and I think Tyler Austin is respected by Yankee fans, but with Greg Bird set to come off the DL in, you know, as early as next week, Tyler Austin is probably going to be the odd man out of back at AAA.
Will that Tyler Austin-Joe Kelly conflict be revisited? Do you think we'll have another situation this season between the Red Sox and the Yankees?
I don't think so personally, based on everything the Yankees have said about it. I'm curious to see what you guys think as far as that goes. As far as the Yankees' perspective on it, I would be surprised if they initiated anything because of what happened. I think that's in the past. We didn't see anything happen this past series, so I think that's been put to bed, but who knows?
I think we see something again. It may not be till the last series of the year, but I think that's just kind of the DNA of this Red Sox team, especially once Pedroia gets back. We know how much, as small as he is, he loves a flight.
No, and, he loves redirecting.
Right, no, he'll deflect the blame after, and that's on him. But no, he needs an issue to deflect the blame on first. So I think they get into something now. If they get in a fight, will David Price start punching Red Sox? I think that's totally a possibility. Let me ask, that's what I wanted to ask you, Jake. When David Price was scratched from that midweek series, what was your reaction to that? Were Yankees fans happy about that, or were they a little disappointed?
No, Yankee fans were disappointed. Believe me. I mean, my Twitter was just, oh, my God, really? He, like, it very conveniently. And the best part about the whole situation is the fact that he pitched well the other day. So, you know, instead of carpal tunnel syndrome, the biggest joke was he's got carpal Yankee syndrome. Because if you look at his numbers against the Yankees, he stinks against them. And he's never pitched well in the playoffs. I mean, David Price is, you know, the best thing that happened to the Yankees. We look forward to David Price. I mean, I don't have the numbers in front of me. But if you pull up what Gary Sanchez's numbers are up David Price, they're ridiculous.
Oh, he's like 5 for 6 with 3 home runs or something like that. I'll tell you
this.
It's
insane.
It's not just the Yankees. He was talking to the media this week, and he was citing all the things that get his allergies going up. Dogs, cats, fresh cut grass is a trigger for him.
Pinstripes.
Warm weather and cold weather he has a problem with. So unless it's in Toronto or Tampa, I guess he's out of luck.
They had
how great was that situation? I mean, it's so funny. And then he has to talk about he's not going to play Fortnite anymore. I mean, the whole thing
please.
Is hysterical. And I can't get enough out of it. And I think the fact that he's making all this money, the fact that he has an opt-out, and I'm sure he's not enjoying his life in Boston, but how is he going to opt out of that with all the money he's still
doing? There's no way.
It's just a situation.
Well, it's funny. They were playing on 98.5, a quote from him this last year. And he's like, you know, I've always been battling allergies. It's been something that I've always had to deal with. And he did, you know, his old mopey voice. And it was just so ridiculous. It's like, this guy is just, it's just excuse after excuse.
They had the Boston Overwatch team on 98.5. Overwatch, professional video gamers on 98.5 saying, yeah, you know, carpal tunnel, that's the most common industry in our air quotes sport. Like, that's what you get from playing a lot. The man is a newborn kid.
Yeah.
And he's playing video games 6 hours a day.
After the games, too. So he's up till 3 a.m. doing this.
Pathetic. All right. Back on Red Sox, Yankees.
Yeah. I just have one question. And this has been a constant with the Yankees the past couple years. Their starting rotation, obviously, CC Sabathia, with the exception of last start, he's been pitching well. You can always rely on a guy in Luis Severino. But you look at, you know, Sonny Gray, you look at...
Stinks.
How's that going?
You look at Masahiro Tanaka. There's a few guys in that starting rotation who haven't really, you know, been up to par. Is there any concern there? Or do you see the Yankees making any moves potentially to bulk up that starting rotation?
I'll answer the second part first. Absolutely, they're going to go out there and make a huge move. I mean, you look at the Yankees farm system. It's second in baseball right now. They have so many guys that not everyone could make the team, and that's why you build up your farm system, so you could go out there and make a move. And they have so much payroll flexibility, because right now they're only at $166 million, only as if it's like no money. But in baseball terms, not a lot of money,
yeah,
where they could take on a contract if they have to make a move. So they will 100% do whatever it takes to get that missing starting pitcher, just like what the Astros did last year with Verlander. I can see the Yankees trying to do a similar thing. As far as the rotation right now, it's kind of twofold, right? Because Severino is clearly your ace. You know what you have in him. Sonny Gray right now, unless he starts magically pitching better, he's not going to be a factor on this team come playoff time. But the other two players in this rotation, you look at CC, and he's proven time and time again that he's just a solid pitcher at this point. Despite his age, when he's healthy and he can go out there, he's going to give the Yankees a chance to win pretty much in all his starts. Outside of two of them this year, he's done that. And I look at Tanaka, and I know he's been up and down as usual, but the thing with Tanaka is in a big game, he's probably the guy you want there out there on the mound. We saw it last year in the postseason. He was the Yankees' best pitcher, getting them all the way to Game 7 of the ALCS. When their backs were up against it, it was Tanaka that took the ball and gave them an unbelievable outing in each of his, I think, 3 postseason starts. So I'm not really worried about him in the regular season, because he's proved that he could pitch in big games during the postseason. But as far as adding another starter, I think if the Yankees are going to be able to contend with a team like Boston and Houston and Cleveland, they're going to need to add another starter so they can go Severino, whoever they acquire, Tanaka, and CC as their first four in the postseason.
And we're talking with Jake Asman from Sports on the Go, one in New York. Jake, before we let you go, you can't really say either team is chasing the other right now because it's a tie for first, but which team should be more nervous about the other? Which team's fans should be more afraid of the other going on a run and maybe putting this division away?
You know, it's tough for me to not say the Yankees, but I also don't get to watch the Red Sox every night. The reason why I can argue the Yankees from my perspective is just I'm looking at this lineup, and Brett Gardner's hitting in the 230s. Aaron Hicks is hitting in the low 200s. Giancarlo Stanton's only hitting 250, and he's just starting to get hot. Gary Sanchez is hitting still in the low 200s, even though, you know, he's second on the team in RBIs. This team is still not reaching their full potential from a lineup perspective. Their potential all-star first baseman in Greg Bird has not played a game yet this year, and their bullpen is loaded with injuries right now. So I think when the Yankees get fully healthy and their lineup starts hitting like we know they can, I think they have a chance to be even better than what they are right now. And it's tough to even be upset. They won 18 of their last 21. So it's only a matter of time until some of these guys come back from injuries, and we'll see what this team is at full strength. So I could see the Yankees playing even better than what they are right now, which is a scary thought, I think, for the rest of the AL, because they're just finding ways to win every night, and they're not even playing their best baseball yet.
Always good to check in with the other side. We'll speak again, I guess, in June, right? I think it's the second week in June that they meet again?
I think it's either the second or third week in June, and it's going to be a fun summer because they play a lot in the second half. So Yankees-Red Sox is going to be great.
They're going to be right there. He's Jake Asman from Sports on the Go, one in New York, host of the Asman and Budick Show. You can follow him on Twitter, at Jake Asman. Jake, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, guys. You guys are awesome. I love calling it. Thanks for having me on.
Calling It is brought to you by American Broadcast Coaches, training the next generation of media talent and communicators. For more information, check out AmericanBroadcastCoaches.com.
Always good to hear from Jake.
Yeah, always.
Jake Asman from Sports on the Go, one in New York. You concerned at all? I mean, they seem to have this issue where the Red Sox can't close out close divisional games on the road. Is that just me, or is that something that...
No, the Red Sox bullpen is a problem in general, and they're going to have to, you know, add to it. Asman was talking about, you know, the starting rotation for the Yankees. Well, the bullpen for the Red Sox is a major problem, and I don't know if Tyler Thornburg alone is going to be enough to...
He should help. Have you seen the videos of him from Pawtucket?
No.
Filthy.
Is he?
Filthy. He's going to help.
Yeah, I hope so.
He better help.
It's about time.
Before we get into the Celtics, we didn't get a chance to just share our thoughts on the sports gaming laws. It's kind of our reaction to our own show here in the third segment. And just so everybody at home knows, we're actually recording this before we talk to Joe. So if we're repeating stuff, we don't always record the show in order. A little behind the scenes for you there, but I'll just start. I think I'm the only person that's against it. I don't want this to turn into a political conversation. Lebowitz, you've heard me say that a million times before on the show.
You have to tell me that.
If you want Lebowitz's political takes, WCAP up in Lowell,
6 to 10.
Yep. 6 to 10, you can catch them there. It's not about the government having less control, which I'm actually all for, and I don't want to get into that any more than that, but it's more what it does to sports gaming. First of all, you felt a little badass when you bet on sports in the past. You were breaking the rule. You were a little...
it was dirty.
It was a little dirty, a little grimy, and it felt... That feeling goes right out the window. More seriously, though, the coverage is now going to become all about the lines and the spreads and the over-under, and I've said it on the show a million times. That's why I made this show. There's not enough X's and O's sports talk, and this is only going to take away from that, because people aren't going to care who wins. They're going to care who covers. And I don't care. I'm sorry, I don't. If you know, New York comes within 4.5 points of Philly, if they didn't win, it doesn't matter to me. That's going to be annoying. The spreads themselves are going to be kind of screwed up because you're going to have all these people who don't know what they're doing, who maybe in the past wouldn't have gambled, now gambling. So it screws that all up. And this totally raises the stakes for games to be fixed. And if you think, oh, you know, they're careful about that stuff and, you know, it's not going to happen, they'll put in precautions, you're kidding yourself. Maybe it's because I just started watching The Sopranos, which, by the way, I know I'm very late, but it's an excellent show.
Watch it if you haven't yet.
Yeah, seriously. I know I'm super late. Like, you can spoil it for me. It's what I deserve. But there's a total window for games to get fixed now. And it has to be a concern. If you're not concerned about that, you're kidding yourself. It's a complete possibility. In this only, look, it was a possibility before. I'm not saying it wasn't, but now it's just low-hanging fruit. So that's my two cents.
Yeah, I'm all for it being legal. I think that's the way it should be. But I understand what you're saying. Like, what will this do to affect not only the games themselves, but media coverage of the games? I hate fantasy football radio. I hate, like, oh, you should start this guy instead of that guy because so-and-so is hurt.
This is fantasy on steroids.
I hate it, and it's just going to make that even more of a part of our sports media, which I don't want. But I'm all for giving people the chance to decide if they want to bet or not and making that more accessible for them. Do I trust the NFL, the NBA, MLB, and NHL to kind of stay on the path that they're on and not, you know, not make gambling in Vegas, well, now the whole country, the priority? I don't know if I trust them to do that. And that's where my main concern lies. Will this become will these sports become more offensive, forgiving?
Look at how much the NFL caters to fantasy football. And that's the one good thing in this. It might cut down on how much people care about fantasy football, because that was the indirect version of sports gambling. Now you can just, you know, now it's just, you know, hitting the nail on the head. But yeah, is this going to completely take over? And you mentioned another thing. Does it, if you're the city of Las Vegas, if you're any one of the casinos in Las Vegas, doesn't this kind of piss you off?
Yeah, you have two teams moving there.
Well, not just that. That was the whole aura of Vegas was the debauchery, and now it's, all right, you can get it anywhere. You don't need to go to Vegas for it.
I think that will still stay
the
same.
But doesn't it take away a little bit?
A little bit. But Vegas, like, their brothels are legal in Vegas.
That's
like,
true.
It's the Sin City. It's the ultimate Sin City. So I think Vegas will always
have
I don't know how many of the
sports nerds are going to the brothel. Well, actually, we're not going to go down that road.
They have the money.
Celtics. They blew out the Cavs Sunday night. We record the show on Mondays, so this will only be relevant for another 36 hours. We're recording this at noon, less than that. 30 hours maybe. But I do want to talk about game one. That was fantastic. That was a lot of fun. I think every Celtics fan, after all the injuries and everything this year, deserved that couple of hours. But did Philly with the confetti, was it too early? Were they a little... You know, for lack of a better phrase, did they blow their load too early?
Jesus. Oh, God. Okay, I won't touch
literally
that one.
Literally could not think of a better phrase.
No, that is a good phrase. It's fitting, inappropriate, but fitting. I'm just kidding. You know, we've seen this with the Celtics. They have these games where every single player on the team plays very well. Game one was exactly that. That's not going to stay consistent. That's just the reality. LeBron isn't going to go 6-for-15 or 5-for-16 from the field in game two three.
He took 16 shots. That's an absurdly low number for him.
It really is.
He was beyond passive on Sunday.
But the reality is this Cavaliers team outside of LeBron James stinks. And that's no hot take. That's just really, it's just a fact.
This may be the worst team LeBron has played on. You can go back to the Mo Williams and the Zydrunas Ilgauskas teams. Maybe those teams were worse, but this team is very close. Kevin Love may be the difference, but that's it.
They're really bad, and the Celtics are really deep. And I think to beat this Cavaliers team, you either have to have a lot of star power or a lot of depth. The Celtics have a ton of depth, and if they continue to play as well as they are, yeah, they can win the Eastern Conference Finals. But that's a big if.
Will the refs let that happen? Will the league let that happen?
Well, they're not going to let them sweep them, I'll tell you that much.
No.
I think that it's going to be a close series, and it's not going to be a 25-point victory for the Celtics every game. It's probably going to go 6 or 7 games, and I think the Celtics do have a realistic shot of beating this Cavaliers team. I think they just stink. They have a horrible coach. They have horrible supporting cast around LeBron James. And
not only do they have a bad coach, Ty Lue's not helping much either.
No, they're not doing anything. He doesn't do diddly squat.
You missed my, I don't know if you got the joke. Not only do they have a bad coach, Ty Lue doesn't do anything either.
Oh, that's fine.
I just wanted to make sure. Okay.
Went over my head.
And I wanted to bring that up because speaking of coaches, you know who was the best member of the Celtics yesterday? Made the biggest aspect was Brad Stevens.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that game plan. They had everybody but, oddly enough, Marcus Smart. There's a chart on Twitter earlier. I'm going off of that, so I'm wrong if the chart's wrong. But according to the chart, which Adam Kaufman had, everybody but Marcus Smart had at least one defensive possession on LeBron. Marcus Morris had the most at 39, but after that, it was all pretty even. And LeBron couldn't get in a rhythm because he couldn't get the same look twice. They went toe-to-toe with him. They were very physical on him, which he flipped out at a reporter, Jared Weiss, who we've had on the show. He kind of gave Jared the business when Jared asked him about being played physically. He clearly wasn't happy with it. That whole press conference yesterday was a joke. By the way,
the photograph.
There's a sheet on the table that lists off all those plays. Go back and watch the video. He's looking down.
I don't care if
he's reading off. Look, he threw in some details, like Tatum hitting the layup with the right hand. That's not on the sheet, but he had a guide.
Yeah, and he, even if he did memorize it, it's such a look-at-me move. That's the most LeBron James thing he could have done.
Look, if he wants to run through the sequence, fine. It was the leaning back and gesturing with the hand after and making the reporters clap. You should have seen the Celtics PR people. Because we were both media majors in college. What is the first thing they teach you about how to handle a press conference?
you're objective. Stay objective. Don't clap.
Do not clap in a press conference.
Yeah.
That is why I hate Jim Boeheim, because he asks people to clap for him in press conferences. LeBron brought – I was in there. I did not clap. I want that on the record. I chuckled a little bit at the people clapping, but that was it.
Was it Cleveland media clapping or Boston media?
Nobody clapped, and then he did the thing with the hand, and everybody started laughing, because what the king wants, what the king gets, I guess. I don't know. It was stupid.
It was a look-at-me move, and that's LeBron James for you. But
such a loser move.
But the Celtics did an excellent job on him. And Marcus Morris, going back to that, it makes you think back to that Avery Bradley trade. When that happened, everyone's reaction was like, that's it? Marcus Morris?
And not just that. Everybody's not just, you know, is that it? But they're losing a huge defensive piece. Yeah. Avery Bradley was
the
defense.
How funny is that looking back?
Right? And this series is why they made that move.
And the reality is, Avery Bradley was a great defense player, and I'm not the first person to make this point. This has been brought up. He's not a versatile defender at all. He can guard a point guard or a shooting guard. Outside of those two positions, he stinks. He's undersized, or pretty much he's just undersized. Marcus Smart can legitimately guard 1 through 4. Maybe 4 is a stretch, but he can do it.
Oh, Marcus Smart totally can.
Marcus Morris, he can do the same thing. So you have a guy who just fits into this team a lot better than Avery Bradley did. And because he was on the floor last night, or Sunday, they won that game. Marcus Morris, 21 points, 10 rebounds. I think he led the Celtics in plus-minus. He was unbelievable, and that whole team just they had a great game plan.
They were super up against it. Can they finish it? I think the series, no matter what, will still be going when we do our – it will. No matter what, the Celtics could be down 3-1.
Well, game 3 is Saturday.
But, right. Stupid schedule. Series will still be going next time we do the show, but can they do it? Can they go to the finals without Kyrie, without Hayward, without all of it?
They can. I'm still not putting my money on them. I think LeBron James hasn't woken up yet, and we've seen what he can do in the playoffs.
No, he will. And they can't let him get any momentum. I will say this. And again, this is I want to keep it level-headed because it's just one game. Some people may be listening to this after game 2. I will say this. If the Celtics can somehow get it back to game 7 at the Garden, which I have Cavs in 6, I don't know if they can do. But if they can, and they don't need to win on the road to do that, and they're undefeated at home, if they can take care of business at home and get a game 7 at the Garden, there is no way, no chance in hell, the Celtics walk out of game 7 of the Boston Garden against Cleveland with a loss.
I agree.
It's not going to happen. The way that building has been throughout the playoffs for the Celtics and the Bruins, and the way both those teams have played at home, no chance. But
I 100% agree with that. I think the
it's what's Cleveland, getting there that's
so tough. So game 2, I know we're recording this and this might be outdated. Is game 2 a must win for the Cavaliers? It is, right?
Yeah.
If they don't win game 2, do you have confidence the Celtics will close it out?
I'm going to kind of sidestep your question. I think the Cavs can take care of business at home. Game 5 is the must win for them.
Okay.
If they win game 2 or 5, they have to take one of those. They can lose game 2, but it just puts that much more emphasis on game 5. They got it, and I mean, obviously they have to win on the Celtics
they floor
to win
the road,
series,
yeah.
But they're not going to do it in game 7.
Yeah.
So it's got to be 2 or 5. All right. Well, we'll talk more about it next week. We could be staring at that game 7 next week. And then, you know, we're starting to no Bruins. Patriots kind of off the table. We get back to the silly season next week. I'm looking forward to it. You can catch this show if you want to listen again, or make sure you grab next week's show on our Twitter at Callin' It Podcast. Check us out online, clnsmedia.com as well. For Alex Lebowitz, I'm Alex Barth. This has been Callin' It, powered by CLNS. We'll talk to you next week. Bye.